if any of you have heard the first Dharma talk that was recorded is on an MP3 on our new website, which is not quite up yet, but it's very quiet. Did you hear that, Mark, when you listened to it?
I did, but I turned up the volume on mine. You can adjust it locally, so.
Oh, okay, I couldn't figure out how to do that. But anyway, we noticed that we have a little jack possibility here, so we'll get a little mic, which will mean that you won't have to do any adjusting on your own. Meanwhile, I'm holding this today, so I'm going to juggle. So I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. And really, our whole, what practice is learning how to take refuge, is learning what the refuge is, and how we can live our whole life in the refuge of the way things actually are, in being able to see clearly, to calm ourselves, to be open and loving in the world, and to recognize the incredible generosity that we are the recipients of at all times. This is our refuge. So we remind ourselves before a Dharma talk, and may this talk in some way contribute to our refuge. So everything in our practice is part of learning how to live in a way that takes advantage of the refuge that is offered, has been offered by the Buddha and all of the succeeding generations of awakened people, and to take refuge in this awakening mind, and to share it with the Sangha who practices together, and also the Sangha of all beings who offer their lives, the benefits of their life to us. I just wanted to start by reading a poem that somebody forwarded to me. It's called The Patience of Ordinary Things. It is a kind of love, is it not? How the cup holds the tea. How the chair stands sturdy and four square. How the floor receives the bottoms of shoes or toes. How the soles of feet know where they're supposed to be. I've been thinking about the patience of ordinary things, how clothes wait respectfully in closets, and soap dries quietly in the dish, and towels drink the wet from the skin of the back, and the lovely repetition of stairs. And what is more generous than a window? That poem really captures the simplicity of refuge. The relief of it, the openness of it. So I and a couple of members of the Sangha are coming out of two successive retreats. The first retreat was last week. It was up at Great Vale Monastery for elders, for people over 60. And then the following morning, we began the workaday sesshin here with the theme of metta practice, loving kindness practice. And it's been a while since I've done two retreats back to back like that, but I am so happy. And I contrast the feeling of going into two retreats, which is a little bit, not quite dread, but whoa, this is going to take a lot of adjusting and a lot of letting go. But then as it unfolds, the tremendous relief as I surrender to the schedule, which is really a very, very challenging part of retreat in the Zen tradition, is a schedule that's kind of relentless. Everything is scheduled. But once the surrender to it happens, which can only be accomplished with a real, almost, or definitely physical relaxation. And all of the resistance energies that gathers as tension in the body, finally, it kind of beats it out of you so that you can relax and open. Once that happens, there's just such a sense of the spaciousness that is always present, the silence and all the sound that is always present, but in this usual way of being, we miss it. So retreat really allows us to begin to wander in the great empty field of openness and love. And then we come back into non-retreat mode, and we maintain the practice and explore it in terms of faith. That we've had an experience of the enormity of life, of our life. And then we come into all the conditions that squeeze us a bit and demand response continually, engagement, action, from being and back into action. So then when we sit in our daily practice, we can open to that and explore faith mind, which is that which knows the enormity, even if at the moment we're not filled with it and sensing it. So that's one thing that came up for me. Silver Dragon Sesshin, the one for elders, we did a lighter schedule that was embedded in the usual schedule. So the usual schedule was kept by the residents and some of the retreatants who felt up to it. And then the embedded schedule was shorter, so we got up a bit later. During work practice, by the end, most people did some work during work practice, but the option was also just to rest. And then the usual post-work sitting practice, and then lunch, and in the afternoon we either sat, did a group work with the Song of the Grass-Roofed Hermitage, which is a wonderful, wonderful sutra that describes the ease and spaciousness that is ours when we live a life of practice. And it goes into it in great detail. I didn't want to focus on that today, so I won't have us all read it, but maybe I'll do another talk on it because it's a great sutra. It's really fun. Page 66. During these Dharma discussion groups, we looked at what are the changes as we age, and how does this affect our practice? Afterwards, one of the brand new residents, so he's been there for 3 months, he's about 25, came up and he said, you know, you were talking the whole time about for aging, but it absolutely applies to my life. And in that way, there is that age too, it's another one of those conditions. It brings along with it all kinds of sensory, physiological, role changes, all sorts of things, as it does throughout our life. You know, when we're little, before school, that's one life. And then we start to move up, and we progress through just this constant change of how we function in the world and how we experience our own physiological situation, you know, the drying out of the old body and all of that means for the joints, and whether you can sit on a cushion or you have to sit in a chair. I mean, there are just so many details that that we're always adjusting to. And the emphasis, and necessarily in the first two stages of life, let's say we have three stages of life, you know, youth, maturity, or middle life, and then old life. The first two are really so much focused on activity and doing and showing up and creating a place in the world and a work and a contribution and a set of relationships and all of this stuff. Who are we? How do I show myself? How do I show up? But then this third stage is all about being, making friends with just being, which doesn't mean that we don't have very important contributions to make and to continue to make, but that to be able to be at ease with our karma, with who we are and how our life has unfolded by design and not by design. It's gone all kinds of unusual ways. And to be able to be at ease with all the ways that we, all of our experience, all of our relationships. And in a life of practice, how do we bring the wisdom, the ethical base, the open-hearted aspiration, how do we bring that to all of the conditions in aging? That's our assignment. It's our challenge, and that's our blessing, being able to do that. I haven't started reading my talk yet. Oh yeah, self-cherishing. So I just wanted to read this quote by Chogyam Trungpa, who I am going back and reading again because he's just so articulate. And you know, he had a life. What a life. I really recommend reading Born in Tibet. I just reread it. It's the book that fell on my nose that started me on the Buddhist path. And I just thought, oh, I should go back and read that. It's so interesting. It's about his boyhood in Tibet and his training, his escape, which was incredibly demanding. Talk about a pilgrimage. And then what came later. And, you know, there was a lot of miscreant behavior in the Trungpa, in his life and in his lineage. Okay, so that's the human element. And then you can I also really appreciate what he contributed. He opened up an enormous field of teaching and refuge for people. And wisdom, learning from how he was and how he wasn't, huh? And the same with our own lives. We have to forgive ourselves for having been propelled by energies that led to difficulty. So he writes, while we remain enmeshed in a selfhood regarded as our own, that's me and mine, separateness, past and future lives are produced by those forces which still bind us to worldly experience. So one of the things as we age, we're reckoning with is, what are all those things that I identify with as myself? Ways that I separate from, that I get special, that I earn my place in the world, and that I guard. It's you know, the self, the territory of the self that has to be guarded, maintained, defended against. past and future lives are produced. We tell all kinds of stories about how we got here, what happened before, who did us wrong, who did us right, all of that stuff. And we also have all kinds of future projections, which can be filled with fear or triumph, all kinds of things that give us a hard time. You know, we think, oh, well, sometime in the future I'll get enlightened, whatever that means. And then we find ourselves at 70 years old and we're not enlightened, so we think, you know? And so we get like, oh boy, I'm still falling short. So that's the kind of thing that's created when the self is created, when the self is hemmed around by this is me and that's not me. And this binds us to worldly experience. That's the last phrase. And I think, you know, as I was reading this, you probably all realized this before, but I never really quite got until I was reading this. And I thought, oh, worldly experience. That's pointing to that experience that I have in my small self, in my me and mine self. Anything that makes that up, that I hold to, that I need, that I feel separated from, that I separate from. Worldly experience, as opposed to nothing, as that which is free of all of that. That which is free of all of that. That which is kind of suspended in great love, you know. In just holding it all without distinction as my life, as life. Does that make any sense? So that was like my big revelation. So I was reading this. And this self which feels so fixed. So it's a big shock as we age to start, you know, the skin changes, the hair changes, the teeth change, the bones change, the joints, the sense of inchoate, indecipherable pains that don't, where'd they come from, what do they indicate, maybe nothing, maybe this is the end, you know, just this whole parade, this whole parade. And it shines a big light on, well, then who am I? Who am I when I pass the mirror and I do a double take? Like, who's that? That's an experience outside and inside, too. Who is that? Who is that? So, Talopa, who's a Bengali tantric Buddhist master, describes the spiritual quest as being like a snake unwinding itself. And unwinding, unbinding, is the natural order. If only it were smooth and circular and instead of like... So this is the law of the Dharma. I mean, Dharma is the law, the way things work, whether we like it or not. So Talopa gives us six pieces of advice, and they are called the six pieces of advice. That's their title. I just pressed something. That's what I pressed. Is that okay?
Looks like you're still recording.
Okay. So. All right. Let's just find out what...
The seconds are still going.
Yeah. Okay, these are the six pieces. The first is let go of what has passed. That includes everything, right? Everything that is not just this. Let go of what has passed. And this means not to ever think. I mean, that's what you know. We really have to summon that this is the middle way. So we may, of course, consider and remember. And in aging, there's a lot of remembering. It's a very important part of the developmental thing that's going on. But it is not to be, it's not to be engaged in a way that creates suffering, but rather in a way that that allows for the wisdom to emerge from it. Wisdom, love, recognition that it was conditioned. These conditions helped something happen, helped me behave in a certain way, helped others behave in a certain way. The next advice is let go of what may come. So we can all of us spend a lot of time worrying about the future. I know a number of people in the stage of life of, 20 to 30 or 20 to 40 even, where what am I going to do? What am I going to do when I finish this degree? I have a daughter in that phase, and I think some members of our Sangha are in that phase. What am I going to do? We can get very, very anxious about that. So how do we let go of what may come? Well, the Dharma offers us the wisdom to, well, one thing that we do is we be very present. And be very present to what we're experiencing, what we're hearing about. I mean, when you're looking for a job, you really want to be tuned into what you have to offer, what makes you glad to be alive, and begin to scan for opportunities to do some of that. So there are all kinds of details in this, but let go of what may come. Let go of what is happening now, which might suggest that not to not be involved, be wholeheartedly engaged. Wholeheartedly engaged. Open to what you know and what you don't know. Let go of what is happening now. Don't try to figure anything out. Good luck. But it's a good thing to keep in mind. Don't ponder that. What does that mean for me? Don't try to make anything happen. What does that mean for me when I am trying to put together a Sangha Jewel Temple? Or a business, or a family, or a... What does that mean? Don't try to make anything happen. Does that mean just kind of sit around and laze around? And then the last piece of advice is relax right now and rest. Rest in this moment. Rest in this companionship. Rest in this breath. So this is really spiritual advice. We have the life of engagement and being and doing, which is our human life, which is the only way, the only form that we have to work with in order to wake up to the larger spiritual life that we are part of as well. So not to despise our human life and our activities. Not at all. That's not the... But just to recognize now, on the spiritual level, there's nothing to worry about. So early in our life, we do a lot of accumulating. Later in our life, we do a lot of divesting. And bringing practice to both activities is a tremendous blessing. So that was the first session, and then the second was workaday session, and I hope that everybody takes advantage of that next time it's offered. This was a wonderful one. What we do is we get together at 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. to meditate. Then we go off into our daily round, doing whatever we do, work, school, chores, whatever. And then come back for Orioki meal, dinner, together, and practice in the evening till about 9, all in silence, including some work, a lot of meditation, Daisan interview, Dharma discussion, and Dharma talks, and walking meditation in the ever more muddy path, Dharma path, as the rains kept falling. And so so the worldly experience are the is all the habits that keep us wrapped up with seeking and guarding territory and judging and clinging with attraction, all wrapped up with attraction and aversion, with should and shouldn't. These are all really formidable worldly forces. So what comes up in Sesshin, in retreat, is a very strong dosage of exactly what obstructs us from being able to be free and relax with our life conditions, which are going to be with us until the very end, whether that's an end or a continuation, we don't know. So in intensive practice, we meet our shadow. In ongoing practice, we work with our shadow selves, those parts of ourselves that we have rejected and abandoned and very often project onto others. We work with all of that in an embrace of loving kindness, compassion, understanding, inquiry. And metta is one of the four divine abidings. The divine abidings are, what are they?
Metta, mudita, upekkha, karuna.
What does that mean? Somebody else. What do those words mean? Metta. Loving kindness. Karuna.
Compassion.
Mudita?
Sympathetic joy.
Joy. Mm-hmm. Dare we say the word joy? Mm-hmm. And upekkha is anybody?
Patience.
Equanimity. Yeah, these are the divine abidings. Divine as opposed to worldly. States of mind that release us from suffering. And also divine because it's such a relief to encounter kindness and love and an understanding heart. It's such a relief to feel it. Maybe if you haven't felt it in your whole life, to begin to open to that, however that happens. Such a relief to be in the presence of those who are understanding and kind, to be on the receiving end of kindness. You know that, I think it's called a meme that's swept through, which is, what is that called? Random acts of kindness. You know what I, remember that?
Yeah.
Random acts of kindness.
And the next person's tall.
Doing for others what you would love to have happen, so that there's this surprise, and it's anonymous. It's just kindness that comes forth from the universe. What a sweetness to add. It's like a little Hershey's kiss in somebody's day. So at Sesshin, every time, every block of sitting, we began with. And let's do this to end today. Begin with bringing attention to the flow of breath in and out. And the beating heart. And then you can repeat after I've said them, the phrases. So the first one is, may I and all beings be free from fear.
May I and all beings be free from fear.
just allowing that to resonate through. May I and all beings experience physical happiness.
May I and all beings experience physical happiness.
May I and all beings experience mental happiness.
May I and all beings experience mental happiness.
May I and all beings be at ease and be happy.
May I and all beings be at ease and be happy.
Thank you.
The four great bodhisattvas.